Earth, sky.
I think a very important thing that the public should understand is that they need to recognize that science is not absolute. And when it comes into a courtroom, I fear that sometimes it's put on a higher pedestal or treated as an absolute. And there are uncertainties in science, just as there are uncertainties in other pieces of evidence.
You're listening to chemical engineer Alice Gast talking about the investigation of the 2001 anthrax mailings here in the U.S. And this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. After the 9/11 terrorist attack in 2001 here in the U.S., letters stuffed with deadly anthrax spores were mailed to media officials and to two U.S. senators. These letters ultimately killed five people and infected 17. Dr. Gast chaired a committee for the U.S. National Research Council that examined the science behind the evidence used by the FBI in their investigation. Dr. Gast spoke more about the NRC study with Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar.
Dr. Gast, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Now, what are the main findings of the NRC study on the evidence from the 2001 anthrax mailings?
Well, the overarching finding is that the scientific part of the investigation was a part of an overall investigation, and that it's not possible to reach a definitive conclusion about the origins of the bee anthracis in the mailings based on the scientific evidence alone.
Now, tell us about the science testing that went into analyzing these anthrax-causing spores. How does one fingerprint these bacterium spores that cause anthrax?
Well, there are a lot of sciences that came together in this, and I must say that the FBI did an excellent job in reaching out to experts around the country, and there were physical and chemical analyses as well as the microbiological and genetic analyses of the letters. What turned out to be the most important part of this particular study was the observation fairly early on, actually, by a scientist and a technician that the material in the letters would form colonies that had different shapes. They're called morphological variants or morphological mutations, morphotypes as we call them. What happens when you grow bee anthracis, particularly in large spore productions, is that you'll develop these mutations. They're mutations in the sporulation function, the function of the bacterium going into a spore phase. And some of those persist and survive under varying conditions, and so you'll get a population of these different mutants, and then looking at that population and comparing it to populations in other samples allows one to make a link between the two.
And these morphological differences, I mean, just for the benefit of people listening, I mean, you're talking about like the difference in shape of the spores. Could you give us some kind of analogy to help us out?
Actually, that's a great question. I should have started back a little earlier. If you take some of these cells and you plate them out, you know, on in a petri dish on a gel plate, and then they start to grow colonies, and so you have that classic picture of circular colonies of bacteria growing on a petri dish. You'll see that some colonies are taking on different shapes than the others, and that's how you can visibly, with a naked eye, observe what are called morphological variants or morphotypes. Then if you take the cells that are growing in that colony, and the colony started from a single cell, and all the cells in that colony will share the same lineage then. That's, you know, it's a blob on this gel, on this petri dish. If you collect those and look at them, you can find the genetic variation on a molecular level that caused or that was manifest in that seeing that different shape on the gel. So the molecular signature is really what can be used then to compare one sample to another. And the FBI focused on four genetic mutations in these samples in order to screen all the other samples that they collected to look for the presence of those four mutations.
The study also talked about parallel evolution as being a factor used to weigh this anthrax evidence. Would you explain for us what the committee meant by that and a little bit about what that is and why that's important to what we're talking about today?
Sure. I mean, that's one of the issues, that you can't say precisely that you are positive that just because a sample had those four mutations that they came about because of the creation of a sample at a particular time. What can happen is, I like to think of it as a large batch of these bacteria growing, and they start running out of food or nutrients. They will go into their spore phase, and that's the interesting thing about spore-forming materials, and they can sit in a spore phase for a long time and then reemerge when they're presented with a host environment where they can grow again. If they start going into their spore phase and then they are given more nutrients, those cells that were slow to form spores are faster to start taking up nutrients and growing and multiplying again. So you can see a population of cells that was deficient in its sporulation and couldn't form spores as easily will become predominant because it starts growing faster when it comes out of sporulation. So you get these mixed populations, and that can evolve quite naturally depending upon how long the cells have been grown, how many generations they've been grown, what the conditions were, whether they were starved of nutrients or all different kinds of conditions just for the cell growth. So over time, depending upon those conditions, you can have these mutations evolving in almost any given cell population.
I mean, so I guess you're saying that the committee explored this possibility that even though the spores from the letters looked like the spores that were in possession by the suspect, they may not be positively linked. I mean, one may not be the parent of the other. It just may be a chance that they are very similar. Is that right?
Yeah, in some sense, it raises the fact that you can't make an absolute link between those samples because there are other scenarios because of the fact that B-anthracis readily forms various mutations of this type. There are other scenarios that you could think of where those mutants would develop through their own evolutionary processes.
What's the most important thing you want people today to know about the scientific review of evidence from the case of the 2001 anthrax mailings?
I think a very important thing that the public should understand is that they need to recognize that science is not absolute. And when it comes into a courtroom, I fear that sometimes it's put on a higher pedestal or treated as an absolute. And there are uncertainties in science, just as there are uncertainties in other pieces of evidence. I think communicating clear expectations of what one can get from these types of investigations is very important during the process and when presenting the results of an investigation. But the public also has to understand that just because it may sound high-tech to them doesn't mean it's ironclad.
You've been listening to Alice Gast, president of Lehigh University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and chair of a special committee on anthrax investigation for the U.S. National Research Council. To subscribe to this and other free science interview podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.